everybody, this is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. I know last week I promised you a new issue. This week there's been a delay. It happens sometimes, and so it won't be till next week. But it'll be awesome. It'll be worth the wait. It'll be worth the wait. Author to Author is also funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association, who have been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. 62 years, if you can believe it. Wow, it's true. You can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. And as you know, they have a writer's conference every year. And boys and girls, it's in just 2 days. That's right, July 20th. Today's the 18th, as I talk to you now. But on July 20th, it will begin at the down there in SeaTac. And, well, I believe that you might still be able to sign up kind of last minute at pnwa.org. I do know that... if you want to, I will be teaching a Fearless Writing Masterclass. If you've read my book, Fearless Writing, or interested in getting it, I'll be there teaching my Fearless Writing Masterclass from 1 to 3 on Thursday. If you go to, if you've signed up for the PNWA, it's free. Not all the masterclasses are. They're usually a little extra, but that one's free because it's a little shorter. But if you want to just go to the masterclass, just the Fearless Writing Masterclass, you can do that. A mere $50. Oh, my God, it's true. Anyway, I'm going to be there teaching a lot of stuff. There's going to be all kinds of agents and editors. It's going to be fabulous. But you know who else is going to be there? Today's guest, Kay Kenyon, the wonderful Kay Kenyon, who is the author of over a dozen science fiction and fantasy novels. Oh, my goodness. Including, get ready, the Entire and the Rose Quartet, Maximum Ice, The Seeds of Time, A Thousand Perfect Things, Queen of the Deep, and her just released At the Table of Wolves fascinating novel. Her novels have been nominated for the Philip K. Dick Award, the Endeavor Award, the John W. Campbell Award, and have twice been nominated for the American Library Association Reading List Award. Wow. Let's get her on here and talk about all things writing. Kay, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Bill. I'm really happy to be here.
All right, so we're going to be seeing
now,
each other.
Do I have to live up to that introduction, though?
Yes, you do. You have to be as exciting as that introduction was. Should be easy.
All right.
So, Kay, we're going to be seeing each other in a couple days.
We are. The conference.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yes.
How fun will
should
that
should
be
a lot of fun.
I love it. It will.
And so, if folks are going to that conference, it's a pretty big conference. It's like 500 people usually, and a lot of Northwesterners I know listen to this podcast. So if people should be making it to that conference, and if they want to meet you, what will you be teaching there?
Well, I've got two workshops. In the morning,
excellent,
I'm going to be talking about the glorious middle of novels. You know,
oh,
most people are afraid of the middle where it really sags, but I think
yes,
it's glorious, and therefore my title. You know, kind of the secrets of from page 100 to page 300. And then in the afternoon, I'm going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, and I call it Landscapes of Fantasy, where I'm going to kind of take people on a tour of all the subgenres and microgenres of fantasy.
Oh, cool. And which day
yeah,
of the week
get,
are you doing?
Kind of get an overview.
It's a 3-day,
oh,
four-day conference, actually. I'm teaching on Thursday,
oh,
I think Saturday and Sunday. When are you teaching?
Yeah.
Which day of the week? Are you...
Right. Both of mine are on Saturday.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
So fantasy. You know, interestingly, fantasy was really my entree into reading and writing. It was my first absolute passion when I was a teenager.
Oh, cool.
It just
cool,
took me – it's a true story. I remember being 12 years old, 13 years old, and I was reading Fellowship of the Ring. And I don't know if you ever are familiar with that book or not, but I was sitting in my room reading that, and there's the scene where – I don't know why I'm telling this, but I just feel like I got to tell you it. There's a scene where Frodo leaves the Shire, and he's going off. You know, he's got to go do his thing. And he and Sam leave the gates of their little quiet, comfortable home, and they're heading off on the road on this big adventure. And I literally sat up in my bed saying, why is my life so boring? Why can't I live a life as interesting as Frodo? I felt so certain it was just my life was nothing but Wiffle Ball and Captain Crunch. I wanted to be in that world. Does that ring a bell with you at all?
Yes, it does. And that's the thing about speculative fiction, both fantasy and science fiction, is that not only will you start off wishing your life could be that exciting, and then if you keep in the genre, you realize that your life is that exciting when you fall into a book. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it took me a while to understand that I had my own dragons to slay and my own journey to go on. But I also learned, I think one of the first steps I took was when I first started writing my first fantasy stories at 14 or 15 or whatever, 13 actually, now that I think back on it, I began to experience in the writing of it what I had first experienced in the reading of it. But it was something even deeper for me in the writing of it. I don't know if that was true for you.
Oh, definitely, because I think you're accessing parts of your mind that you don't normally go to, because it's extrapolation, it's experimental, and it's just not part of your everyday life. So when you go there in writing, in fantasy and science fiction, you're kind of dropping down into your own mind. It's quite a fascinating process in that sense, I think.
Oh, it's incredibly fascinating. And were you someone, I mean, how did this writing journey start for you? Was speculative fiction, because whatever, science fiction, fantasy, that world of an invented world, so to speak, you know, more or less, although your most recent book mixes real and unreal. Was that always an interest, or was that something you had to find in as you grew up, as you matured?
Well, I always loved, like you, I started reading young, and I loved fantasy and science fiction, the Voyage to the Mushroom Planet, you know, when I was eight, and then moving on to Lord of the Rings later, and all of those things. But I, as I got into early adulthood and had to earn a living, I just put writing on hold, and I wondered what I could succeed at writing, and I had no self-confidence at all. And foolishly, I eventually decided that it would be easy to break into fantasy and science fiction, so why not start there?
It seemed easier than, like, poetry or literature or something.
Well, you know, I love poetry and I love literature. You know, I was in, nearly took a master's degree in literature in college. So I could have, you know, ended up anywhere, but somehow I thought this field would be easier. And, of course, it isn't. There isn't any genre that's easy to break into. I mean, they're all, you got to find something that you really love, because you're going to be living with that day and night and year after year for decades. So you better like it. And better if you love it.
So it's better if you love it. It's really, I got to tell you, I teach a lot of writing, but, you know, so I have this book, Fearless Writing, that just came out. It's really not about how to write. It's really about how to overcome the blocks that keep you from writing and how to get into the frame of mind where writing is possible. And you know, I've interviewed so many writers and written so much about this. And one thing I absolutely will go to the mat for is you will never be better as a writer than when you're writing what you love, that you can't be any better. You can't be any more original, focused, happy, that's you at your best, period. You know, find that whatever it is.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, especially when you become a professional writer and you have editors and agents that are waiting for your next book, you have to be productive. And so pretty much the life of a writer is to always be writing. And how sad that would be if you were writing things that you had contempt for.
I don't think you could do it. I think you would. I don't know how you finish a book. I always liken it to a marriage. It's like you better love the person you're with, because you're going to get into arguments. You know, there's going to be disagreements, but if you love each other, you can get through those things, because the love is what pulls you through. And you're going to get probably even 14 books in. Is that what we're on now, number 14? Is that what 14 books in, I'm sure you still get into the occasional arguments with your books, maybe a little bit, where you don't see eye to eye on where this thing is going and you're not sure?
Or have you
mastered it now and it never happens?
No, I get in a really bad place, but it's not so much how I would say argument, but it's more of absence. You know, it's lack of inspiration, a feeling of being dried up, a feeling of kind of the windy cave syndrome of, oh my God, where is my next story? What is it going to be? And on the one hand, there's this you're laughing wildly. There's this world of, I could write about this or this or this or this or this.
Yeah.
But you have to settle on something, and it's like you're going to be living with this for a year, so it better be something that you really think has. It vibrates in a corner of your heart somewhere, and I find sometimes that it takes me several months to find that place that really vibrates with me. And I'm very patient these days in waiting for it. Maybe that's why I'm a slow writer, but I just think just because you've got an idea doesn't mean that's the first thing to jump on. You might say, oh, it's a great idea, let me write that down. And then you go to the next idea, and if it doesn't excite you at some level, then it's maybe not quite the one. But if you wake up the next morning and it does excite you, so just write them down, and eventually you land on one that you start pursuing.
Go ahead.
You're so out of your element. Well, good. I get to control this. I'm just going to say that I think if you settle on a story that's less than the one you're really excited about, you can end up flogging it and then feeling guilty for not being in love with your story. So that's why I think it's always worthwhile to wait for that one that just gives you this aha moment.
Yeah, I totally agree. The first one I heard, I think it was my wife who shared it with me. She was a big fan, or she is a big fan of Roald Dahl. And he talked about that when an idea came, you had to kind of, I can't remember what the exact language is, and I regret that because I quite liked how he phrased it. But basically, you got to kind of chew on it for a bit, because you, just like you said, you're going to be with it for a year, so you better make sure as best you can. And it seems to me that, you know, one of the things I tell my students and clients is, you know, you got to learn how to write a book. If you want to write a book, you do have to learn how to write a book, but you also have to learn how to write your book, because there's what I write, there's what you write, and there's what Kay writes. Mm-hmm. So everybody has to learn. And likewise, you have to learn what the difference between being really interested and kind of interested, because there is a difference, but you have to know, you know, ignore that. Don't worry about it. My little beeping. you know what I mean? You got to learn that difference.
You do, but it's kind of like meeting someone on a first date. There's just chemistry that happens with you. Your heart starts beating a little faster. Sometimes when I get an idea that I love so, so, so much, I get so nervous that I have to get up and walk because I'm thinking, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, thank you, God.
That's good.
But, you know, that's how exciting that kernel should be, I think.
Yeah.
You know, unless
I
you're
totally
writing a year and making $1 million, and then I don't know. If I were seduced away by a lot of money, I don't know what I might do. I mean, my husband could give up his day job, and I might be seduced, but that's not my problem.
Well, but you know, in the end, I would rather take half the money and love what I'm doing than twice the money and just have to get through it, because in the end, my life is the experience I have. And to me,
one of the best experiences I have
is writing. You know, it's just, it's as good as it gets when it's going well. So I don't
know. I know.
I don't even care myself. Well, so you've got a wonderful blog on your website. I recommend our listeners check it out. It's kkenyon.com. There it is. And so you're currently kind of moving your way through some myths of writing. You're dispelling some myths for your readers, and I would love to take a peek at some of these. One of the ones I'm glad you went after this one, which is, it's a dog-eat-dog world. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and you say, no, it's not.
Right.
Why isn't it a dog-eat-dog world?
You know, I'm not sure because it's highly competitive. It is the arts where everyone is always concerned that they're not going to make it. But for some reason, I've found that the people I meet are the best part of writing. I hesitate to say that because I love to write, and we all love to write. We're exploring our psyches. And that's so just, that's universally important. But I was so bowled away by the fact that there were people at a higher level in involvement in the industry than I was who were just willing to sit down and chat with me, who were willing to advise, occasionally maybe even read a manuscript from an unpublished writer. So I found that my best friends also are my fellow writers. And so it comes as a great surprise to me, and I don't know why writers are so generous, but possibly one of the reasons is that a lot of writers struggle to break in, or maybe they wrote a novel and it sank, and they struggle for recognition and visibility. And so people remember that struggle. And they actually, and out of total generosity, they want to do a little, you know, hand up to people. So, you know, if you've got any humanity in you at all, and you've now made your way down the road a little bit, you want to you want to lead the way, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's what you – well, for a while you were running a lovely writers conference down there in Wenatchee, and so clearly you want to – and you're – and just the fact that you're taking the time to write a blog about the myths of writing is testament to your desire to help people to because, you know, it really isn't competitive in that way. I mean, yeah, I mean, theoretically, people are competing for the same contracts or awards or whatever, but we're so each of us on our own path, you know, and really your path can't obstruct my path. I just don't see how it can. It's not like sports or whatever, you know.
You know, maybe I misspoke when I said competitive. Cause you're right. We don't directly compete with each other.
Yeah, we really don't.
Even
I don't think.
You know, in fantasy field, for instance, one writer not with another. But there's another aspect of this which is can be a challenge, and that is that there are only so many accolades and contests and awards to win. And people are very conscious of the status-defining moments. And so it can be really tough if you're not winning those awards and you're not feeling like you're being appreciated to the level. In other words, I hate to say
jealousy.
This, but envy.
Yeah. There is envy.
And,
there's no doubt about it.
And it's, you know... I was dealing with a friend the other day who was talking about envy in this industry, and I just said, look, it will always be with you. So you just have to find a way of not feeling like a monster for having those feelings. You know, accept that you feel jealous and move on. And, fall into your book and let that be your raison d'etre. But don't beat yourself up for feeling envy. It's so natural.
It is, and I think I heard someone describe envy beautifully, which is envy is seeing something that you desire, that you would like to have. Now, it could be just more sales, perhaps greater readership, whatever, but you seeing someone having an experience that you think you would like to have, but believing you can't. So it's one thing if you see someone, you know, if you're not a published author, you could meet a published author and think, ooh, that's great, I want that for me. Or you could meet them and say, oh, what's wrong with me that I don't have that? You can either let the people who are living the experience that you would like be your inspiration, or they become, their very existence becomes a criticism about you, essentially. And so I try to remember that when I start feeling a little envious, because I do, even as evolved as I am, Kay, I feel a little envious sometimes. And I try to focus, saying, well, what do you want? What is it you want you think you can't have that you see that person has, you know, with, whether it's giant workshops or whatever. You know, does that make sense?
It does. And it's you're right. It's an evolved way of looking at it. But I'm glad to hear that you occasionally feel envy, so I don't feel like such a monster. But,
yeah, we all...
I think... one of the ways out of envy is what you just said, and also to just send a little wish out into the universe. I wish that kind of success for him, and I wish that kind of success for me, and let it go.
Yeah.
That way you're wishing both of us you know,
right.
goodwill.
It's good. No, it's true. I think that's lovely, too, because it never feels good to sort of hate on anybody. Nobody.
It doesn't. And
even people you're sure they deserve it. It doesn't even feel
good. Yes, and there, believe me, they're out there.
And there are those. Yes.
When I first got an agent in this business, I was on the phone. That was at a time when I didn't have a whole bunch of experience dealing with an agent and didn't realize they don't really want to hear you whine. But I called up
right.
an agent and I was whining about my numbers on the latest book. And he said, Kay, don't go there. Envy and jealousy are so rife in our industry, it will consume you. And I could still hear his voice in my ears, even though I'm not with the same agent. I just think,
wow.
You've got to get past it. You just have
yeah,
to.
You do. And now another myth I'm so glad you dispel for your readers is it's all who you know. It's all who you know. And you say, I know this is bunk, but you say, bunk.
Yeah, there's just this sense in the general public there's a secret handshake and
yeah.
that it's a little bit of a conspiracy here, you know?
Yeah,
because
right.
how does, you know, John Grisham always sell all these books and he
right.
writes, you know, and whatever. So you have the feeling that because you don't understand something, that there are conspiracies at work behind the scenes. And this kind of, it's a little paranoid. And in fact, the agents and editors, they're just looking for the next good story, the next great story. You know, they depend on you as much as you depend on them.
That's
and
right.
And so
yeah.
it really doesn't matter who you are or where you live. So
no.
I'm a big believer in that one. I don't know why it's such a myth that it's all in who you know. Maybe because, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, my brother and my good friend Chris both work in Hollywood. And in that industry, there is a bit more of that for I think a bit more of that, although what happens is, because there's so much more money involved, I think it just creates a different environment. But I think that it does help, there's no doubt that it does help to know people. You know, as I've known more and more people, things do move along quickly, but it is not hard to know people. If you go to a writer's conference, you will get to know people. If you join a writing group, you will get to know people, even though maybe no one's been published, but then one person gets published. And so it's really not that hard to get to know people. I think that part of the myth is that somehow you'll be boxed out, that no one's looking to box anybody out. You know, it's just art.
That's right.
You just aren't. We're looking to writers are very friendly people. They're introverts, but they're friendly. You know,
that's a good juxtaposition. I love that.
It is, but well, you know they are. Everybody wants to go home and go be in their cave a little bit, but that's okay. But then they can be immensely friendly when they get out, and I have found that to be the case. Such generosity from all the writers I've known over the years. It's been just lovely. Well, so we still have a few minutes left. Now, people, if they want the full dose, they're going to have to go to the class. But can you give me just a dose of how you help people with the middle. If you had, because for those of you who have never tried it, the sagging middle is a classic challenge for a great many novelists in particular, but you find the middle glorious. What's one of the keys to making it glorious?
I think the key for me is to understand that the middle of a novel is virtually where everything important happens, because the beginning is set up and the ending is, you know, tying off loose ends. So the middle, if you're not excited about that, you're not perhaps understanding that that's where your story happens. And so, yeah, that's where it all happens, and it's so cool. And the reason that it's perceived as a land of sagginess is that people believe that the middle is without structure, you know, that they're lost in the forest.
Right.
And it isn't without structure. I mean, there's wonderful elements of structure in the middle of the novel that, that lead you on your path towards what your soul wants to write. I really believe that. It's like having the structure of the sonnet. You know, there is a structure there. It's underlying, and it's not terribly restricting. It's freeing. It's like Robert Frost said, it's like about rhyming at the end of lines. He said it's like being easy in harness. And so I'm a believer in the structure of the middle of the novel and places it can take you.
Right. Well, I think that's a good point. And I think to me, one of the things I think about when I think about middles is that's where the problem has to get worse. That whatever problem you introduce at the beginning, I teach memoir writing, but is memoir is very close to the novel, I hate to say, but it really is in a lot of ways. But that's where the problem gets worse. That whatever trouble you introduce at the beginning, it better get worse in the middle, usually. Is that fair to say?
That's so true, but at the same time, it can lead one a little astray because once you're throwing rocks at your major character, you get into a repetition of intensity so that well, first this bad thing happens, and oh, my gosh, really? And then, oh, this bad thing, really?
Right.
And so, you know, it can become episodic a little bit just in terms of intensity. And so I think what you want to do is build in the middle. Build the sense of conflict, and it's so logical when you think about it because the person who's against your major character, they're not going to throw out everything they've got at first. They're going to throw out the simplest thing they think can stop you, and then it doesn't pull out much heroism from your major character. But if that doesn't work, then the stakes go up a little bit. Well, I'm going to try a little harder. Let's put this foot out in front of them. and then that pulls something extra from your major character, like, oh, well, then I got to grow up and learn to do this. And so there's this wonderful step progression that is both plot and character.
Oh, did you hear that, readers, listeners? That is such good, clear advice you just gave. The antagonist is not going to give you everything at once because they assume the protagonist isn't that big a problem a lot of the time. They've got bigger things on their mind, especially in the world of fantasy and speculative fiction. That's often the case. Oh, I love it. That's so clear, Kay. Very good.
Oh, well,
very good. I'm going to use that. I'm going to attribute it to you, but I'm going to use it.
You have my permission.
That's awesome. All right. Well, and there's going to be more gems like that at your class this Saturday at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. But before I let you go, you got to answer my favorite question, which is, if writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
I think it's taught me not that it won't save me.
Oh, it won't save you. I love it.
Well,
and you thought it would once upon a time.
I thought that if I only sold a book, I would be worth something.
Right. Oh, and, God, isn't that a trap?
Oh, it is. And so I've learned through thick and thin in 20 years of my career that there'll be times when no one wants what I have. And there'll be times when a lot of people will want what I have. And so if I'm defined by that, I'm lost. And writing will not save me, and also writing won't kill me. You know, if it doesn't work, I still exist.
Right. Oh, Kay, I love it. Boy, I've asked that question probably 500 times. That's the first time I've heard that answer, and I love it. I love it.
Well, I'm afraid that sometimes I get a little too honest when I'm talking to people.
No, there's no such thing.
You know,
no such thing. I love honesty. Well, Kay, okay, so the book is At the Table of Wolves. At the Table of Wolves, you'll be appearing, I see from my little schedule, you're going to be appearing around in the Seattle area through July, and and a little bit into August. Well, you've already done a bunch of your appearances, haven't you? Oh, well. Okay. But you're going to be at the conference.
Yeah, I've done some of them.
You'd be at the conference, and they can buy At the Table of Wolves, where all fine books are sold, I'm sure.
That's right. And if you want a signed copy, you could call at A Book for All Seasons in Leavenworth, which I know you know them very well.
I do. Yeah, you have a lovely bookstore.
They will get me up there to personalize and sign copies before they send out. So that's another option. And also I want to mention that I just sold this book to audible.com, so an audio version will be coming out on audio.
Oh, great. Are you going to read it or someone else going to read it?
No, someone else is going to read it. This wonderful voice talent named Nicola Barber. So I'm really thrilled.
Are you going to listen to it when she does it?
Why did you?
It's going to be too hard.
It's too hard. I can't stand listening to my audio books because it just moves so slowly because I have that thing memorized. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I
but
totally get you.
To her for about 20 minutes and then I'm done.
All right. All right, Kay. Well, listen, I'm going to see you in a couple of days, and I hope.
I know.
Well, and maybe some of our listeners will see you as well. But congrats on the book, and
Thank you.
I can't wait for the next one.
Thanks so much, Bill. What a pleasure.
You're welcome. Well, it can't save you. She is right. She's right. The book is not going to prove your value. You're valuable. The book is an expression of your value. It's already there. You've already got it. You've already got it. Okay. I will be at the conference, PNWA conference, starting this Thursday. I hope I see you there. I will be back again next week. As always, I want to thank my wonderful co-producer, RJ Jeffries. So get out there, do what you love, write something you love, because you're already good enough.